Time for Wednesday's hour number two on Hashtag Daily K with your host, Peter Bint. Korean dramas, movies, and even lyrics. Why is the world paying attention to Korean stories?
From classics to modern masterpieces, time to dig deep into the charms of Korean literature.
On Check It Out.
With Paul.
It is a Wednesday, hump day, jump day, pump day, check day. Check it meaning is. Book in Korean.
It is.
Paul is here.
It is. It is here.
It is here. It is here with very fine beard.
Styling myself after Cousin It from the Addams Family.
Oh, I remember watching the black and white Addams Family on Channel 4, I think it was.
Doodle-doo-doo. Diddle-doo-doo, diddle-doo-doo,
diddle-doo-doo. Happy birthday. I don't remember any of the lyrics at all. Yes, sorry. Yeah, that's been around for ages. The Wednesday remake. Have you seen that on the Flix?
I watched an episode.
Not great.
It was fine. There's too much to watch these days. So unless it really drags you in.
There is way too much. You know, that's why I think it's not good. Like, too much choice. Too much choice can kill you. That's not what Freddie Mercury is saying, is it?
Too much love can kill you.
But too much choice, I feel, all right, it's not going to kill you. But it's not good because I liked being spoon-fed things in the past. Like,
yeah.
Someone deciding what was good for me. Because then you would sit through it, even if it had a slow start.
Even if it was terrible.
Yeah, well, that's true as well. So that's maybe the negative. But these days, I feel like if something doesn't drag you in the first episode or first, like, even 10 minutes, you're likely to just say, nah, I'm not having
it's
this.
It's tough. I think if there's someone you like in it,
yeah,
you're more likely to sort of stick it out for a little bit.
That's why I get the big bucks, yeah, to draw people in. Well,
these days, I wait till the end. I wait till the series is finished before I start it.
Oh, really?
I want to find out if it's going to get a second series.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes things get cancelled after the first series and then
leaves
you on a cliffhanger and you're like, why am I spending my time to watch something that's never going to conclude?
Oh, that's clever. But I do prefer the old style of Korean drama, which never had a follow-up series. I want things
too.
To finish.
I like to have a concluded story. But that's what I liked about, this is not Korean, but Breaking Bad, back in the day when it came out, because it was like five seasons, that's it.
Okay. Did you wait till the end of all of those?
Oh, no, I watched that. But nowadays, it's like, is this coming back? Is this not coming back?
Things just fizzle out nowadays, I feel.
Yeah, and it's why I'm very skeptical about Squid Game 2, for example.
Oh, me too.
Because it got to the end and I went, oh no, you've set up for a sequel.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be concluded. I thought it was going to be one and done and we'd all go, yay! But no.
No. I'm not really putting a lot of eggs in that basket. Today's hashtag
is
Shikdorak, which kind of is similar to gastronomy. Like,
okay.
And so we used the sentence, 여행은 식도락이지, which means like travel is all about the food, all about the eating and stuff like that. What comes to mind when you hear the word gastronomy? Because a lot of our English listeners will say they don't really use that word. It's not really familiar to them.
I would disagree.
I'd
use that word.
You are very well-to-do, though. And I think, for your average, like, man on the street, maybe you don't say gastronomy a lot.
I think it depends how much you care about food.
Okay.
And I've always cared about food. My whole family has cared about food. When I was growing up, I think it was Tuesday night, there was a program on the UK TV called Food and Drink, like at 8:30 in the evening. And that would be watched religiously by all of my family. We would sit down for half an hour.
Was that the one with the wine expert?
Yeah, with Gilly Gould and the wine expert.
Oh, really? That was too posh for me, that show.
Okay, that was appointment viewing.
What was on that?
Well, there was Michael Barry who would cook something. There was Gilly Gould who would sniff a wine and said it smelled like, I don't know, old rugby player's pants. And then there was another guy who was doing other stuff and they'd have special guest cooks. And it was sort of celebrity chefs cooking before celebrity chefs were really as popular as they've become.
That's really old, like from the 80s.
Exactly, So I've always been interested in food. When we went on holiday every summer, we'd often usually go to France for a week or two.
Yeah.
And the main activity basically was, okay, today we're going to go to this village. There's something to see there, but more importantly, which restaurant are we going to go to?
Ooh, nice.
My parents were focused on the food.
Wow.
My father would literally spend half an hour walking around the village, checking every restaurant menu to find the best restaurant for us to eat in.
That's amazing. What's a food that you had in France on holiday that sticks out in the mind?
I mean, as a kid, the thing you can't go wrong with is steak frites.
Oh.
Bit of steak, a few chips.
Nice.
Lovely.
Did you ever have that bird that you're meant to eat covering your mouth because it can bleed when you crunch
the bones?
You
mean the ortolan that you put the hanky over your head? No, of course not.
No?
No.
That's not a good one for kids.
Don't think so.
Today...
You've not noticed what's different about me today.
You're wearing a jacket?
Yeah.
You are wearing a jacket.
Spring.
Oh, wait, so... In winter, you're in short sleeves, no jacket.
Yeah.
In spring, you have a nice thin jacket on.
Yeah.
What gives there?
Well, because the heating's getting turned off now.
Ah, so it's getting a bit chillier in the studio.
No, it's not chilly. It's just comfortable.
Okay.
It's fine.
So you can wear a jacket as well. I heard a new term the other day, shacket. Have you heard of a shacket?
Is that a rude word?
No, it's a shirt jacket. So those shirts that are a bit thicker,
they're just
worn.
Shirts.
No.
They are just shirts, Peter.
Mark Chapman called it a shacket, so I am calling it a shacket.
I've never met Mr. Chapman. I care not for his fashion vocabulary.
Today's book, I'm intrigued by the title, the author, and the translator.
Oh,
it's three for three.
It's a goodie today, Peter. I think this is a book that everyone should be reading.
Ooh.
If you're a sci-fi fan, then get your hands on it. I've been looking forward to it ever since it was first announced.
Wow.
And then when it was released, I knew I had to share it on the show.
Yes.
It is Your Utopia. It's by Bora Chung, who's known as Chung Bora here in Korea. And it's translated by Anton Herr. And if you're a regular listener, you will remember that about a year and a half ago on Halloween, we featured Cursed Bunny.
Yes.
Which was a brilliant collection of grisly, gruesome horror stories. And now we get another anthology, but this time it's science fiction themed. And of course, when you've got Anton Herr translating, you get a very high quality translation. You've got eight brilliant tales. I can't talk about them all.
Okay.
So I've picked... not my favourite, but one of my favourites.
Okay.
Because I don't want to spoil my favourite one. I'll talk about that later.
Okay.
It's a tale called Seed. I think this is the second to last tale in the book.
Uh-huh.
And it takes us to a planet where the trees are not quite trees, the humans are not quite humans, and nature has to be preserved.
Oh, sounds intriguing. Tell us a bit about Bora Chung.
Bora Chung, famously shortlisted for the International Booker Prize. By the way, congrats to Sora Kim Russell, longlisted for the International Booker Prize.
Nice.
For Hwang Seok-yeong's Mater 2.0, I think it is, that we covered on the show before.
Yes,
we did. The one about the trains.
Wow.
That just came out yesterday, the news. So congrats to her. Congrats to her co-translator. And I can't remember her name, and I'm really sorry. But also to Hwang Seok-yeong. Bora Chung, again, shortlisted for that. She's been writing since the late 90s. She's not just a writer, she's also a translator. She teaches Russian language and literature at Yonsei University.
Wow.
She translates Russian and Polish fiction into Korean. Cursed Bunny was our first chance to get a glimpse of her. Your Utopia is our second, and it does not disappoint.
Oh, I'm so glad, because there was a big build-up for it. And Anton Herr, thanks to also being shortlisted for that prize. Very famous.
Not just for that, but also for Love in the Big City by Sang-young Park, or Park Sang-young.
That's true.
Double shortlisted in the same year. Yes, Anton Herr, regular on the show. We love his work. If his name's on the book, you're going to get your hands on it. It's his second collaboration with Bora Chung. He did Cursed Bunny. And I hope that people around the world are reading it, because it's a brilliant book.
How short are these stories, are we talking? Because, you know, I feel there's a lot of emphasis now on longer things, even on like streaming services. There are some things that are really short little episodes, which I was a bit skeptical about, but that one that really caught me was it Love, Death and Robots, I think was the title.
Yeah, it's a very famous anthology series.
It's amazing. And I kind of turn my nose up to short stories, thinking, you know, you're not going to get too deep into them.
What? Oh, you've missed out, Peter. Short stories used to be the thing.
Uh-huh.
They used to be, we'd have magazines you get every month with collections of short stories.
Uh-huh.
Kurt Vonnegut's short stories, Stephen King's short stories, Philip K. Dick's short stories, Shirley Jackson's short stories. There are so many authors who produced these brilliant short stories because they were trying to make money, trying to earn money. But a short story condenses everything, which means you can't waffle. You can't give me a long description about his shacket or whatever he's wearing. You have to get to the point, and you have to capture the reader's attention in the first page.
Oh, wow. So these are like, what, tens of pages long?
Yeah, we're talking like 30 to 40 pages each. It's about 240 pages, I think the book is.
Oh, nice. All right, so we're looking at Seed. Are we picking this up at the beginning?
The very, very beginning, so no introduction needed. They're coming. When the pagoda tree first spread the news, we all became very excited. An excitement born of anticipation, or one heavy with tension and worry, or half of each. Everyone felt the same way. The future of our world would depend on this single and first encounter. While such rhetoric is often used in comic books or sci-fi novels, it was really pertinent this time. But that wasn't the only reason we were nervous and excited. If this was something completely in our power, to succeed or fail at, we wouldn't have been so worried, but there was simply too much that was beyond our control. Control we had to concede to the wonders and workings of nature. It's a good thing that nature abhors a vacuum. Nature was the only thing we could trust in the end. They're coming. The news pollened quickly through the forest, and soon we could hear them coming with our own ears. The time had come. The machine they arrived in whipped the air through many grasses and leaves, but more than that, it killed countless flowers and insects. We knew this was the way they behaved, but to see it with our own eyes was quite the experience. A bit of rage mixed in with our tension and excitement and worry, which was why, by the time they stepped off their machine, a somewhat uncharitable sentiment was flowing among us, prompting them to immediately start sneezing and coughing. What really surprised us wasn't their sneezing or coughing, nor was it their loud and smelly and large and dirty machine that made a horrible sound as it landed and killed many of our plants and animals. We had heard many stories about them already. We were ready for that. But it really was the act of looking at them with our own eyes and smelling them with our own noses where the shock awaited us. There would always be a discrepancy between what's understood with the mind versus direct experience. They all looked the same. Siskosa says, sci-fi's not my favourite genre anyway, but let's see. There's a robot on the book cover. So is the story about a robot utopia? Well, actually, the title story, Your Utopia, does involve robots. I won't spoil anything. But yes, there are robots involved. It's also a cracking story.
Nice. So the tree is narrating, and I feel when we're talking about these people coming, yeah, you're led to believe it's aliens, but isn't it humans that are coming, sneezing maybe with allergies and stuff like that?
Yeah, but they're genetically engineered, it seems.
Oh.
So they're not quite human-human. And the narrator is sort of a tree.
Oh.
All of his people are named after trees.
Okay.
And they communicate through pollen in the same way that trees do.
Okay.
But they've got eyes, they've got noses, so they're sort of hybrids.
Oh, yeah.
They're a fusion.
I was wondering if that was figurative, like smelling through their noses, but they have
noses. No, they do, yeah. Okay. So they're encountering these sort of humans for the first time. Yeah, and they're not the original humans, it seems. The narrator sort of briefly mentions that their species has evolved into what they are today. And we find out more about that later.
Okay.
And these sort of human visitors are from the Mycenic Biotech Corporation.
Oh.
And they're not in the mood for pleasure. It's all business.
Okay.
So they want to know what company the trees are from, but they're like, we don't belong to a company.
Oh.
So you're farmers. Well, we grow things, but it's not for a business.
Oh.
So it's there's miscommunication going on here. And the head of the team, this woman, tells them that they're investigating these contaminants they found in their fields.
Oh.
And if it comes from them, comes from the trees, we're going to sue you for it.
Oh, wow. It sounds very corporate versus natural.
Absolutely. And Oak is like, this has nothing to do with you. What we do is nothing to do with your company. Mm. Willow's saying, yeah, because, you know, your land belongs to you, our land belongs to us.
Okay.
But the woman's undeterred. And she's going, look, it's clear your seeds are contaminating our land. And also, there's another company over there who owns the water and energy resources rights. And there's no record of you having permission to use the water in the river that runs through your land.
That sounds a lot like situations on Earth, right?
It does.
Capitalism clashes.
Yeah. So the trees are not happy. Older, the tree suggests just like shoving loads of pollen at them to set off their allergies.
Good idea.
But Zelkova wants to sort of talk and wants to negotiate and persuade them about the water. And that's where our second reading is going to take off.
Very interesting. Tree-like creatures communicating with these genetically modified humans. Let's pick it up there.
But isn't water a common resource, meant for everyone? Zelkova asked in a smooth voice.
If it's not flowing, said the woman icily. For example, if there's a naturally occurring water source in your land, like a lake, then the water rights of that belong to you. But the water in this land is water that is passing through, and the source of that water, as well as its destination downriver, are all owned by Sukinshin.
But surely as a Mosinic employee, you're not here to do Sukinshin's work for them, said Zelkova, still smooth.
Not smooth enough, apparently, as the woman seemed to have caught on to the note of mockery in their question.
Well, no. Mosinic and Sukinshin are both completely different companies, she said quickly. Because of Amendment 18 in the 2034 Natural Resources Act that forbids the monopolization of natural resources by a single company.
In other words, the only reason Mosinic and Sukinshin did not merge into one company was because of those two lines of law. As long as they are two separate corporate entities on paper, at least, it would remain completely legal, or somewhat legal, if one cared to argue the point, to use all sorts of grotesque methods of increasing their profits by slowly destroying nature, humanity, and the whole planet that we live on. But the moment these two companies were to merge, they would monopolize the resources of the entire planet, and thus become illegal, which would bring about their own downfall, through the company's many enemies lying in wait in the legislature and presidential palace, although this would also decimate the lives of the countless subsistence farmers who have already seen their fields and livelihoods ruined because of costly lawsuits brought on by either company. Had these people looked that way since birth? Seeing as how everyone is genetically engineered to some extent before they're even born, I wouldn't have been surprised if these dolls before us were manufactured this way in the womb. Which made me less reluctant about doing what we were about to do. We couldn't let those people, the people of Mosinic or Sukinshin, pursue their endless greed for profit and money and more profit and more money at the expense of our whole world.
Oh, so the trees are going to fight back, like Lord of the Rings style-y.
They're not Ents.
No. So it does seem like just this clash of capitalist interests versus like being more humane and down to earth.
Yeah.
Pun intended there with the trees.
Pun not taken.
These two companies, they seem to kind of be in cahoots.
Yeah, it very much seems that way. They know the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Mosinic is interested in what's happening with Sukinshin.
Uh-huh.
It's all wrapped up together. And we know that corporations will do anything they can to exploit all that they can.
That's their function, you know. I guess you can't blame a corporation. That's their mission, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can blame someone. If your mission is to kill and destroy and to exploit, you can blame someone.
Yeah, the people above, I believe. Like, not the soldiers, right? And
I was only following orders, yes. I believe it is the expression that we condemn.
That's what corporations do. They're only following their remit to make money and more money.
It's disgusting. So, yes. So, Zelkova, though, insists that any issue with Sukishin has to be resolved with them, okay. Not with Mosenik. We're not dealing with you about that.
That's true.
The argument continues. Alder's keen on getting more pollen out. Pollen gets thrown about. The human-y humans are sneezing and saying, you're trying to poison us. And then they demand, we need to collect and we need to test samples from your land and crops. We need to find out the truth.
Uh-huh.
The tree's like, okay. And we know that there's something else going on here. We know there's a plan, but uh-huh. We don't know what at this point.
Okay.
And they lead the humans to the clearing where they live.
Oh.
And the humans are like, well, no, are you trying to trick us? Where are the buildings?
Uh-huh.
Well, we don't need buildings.
Yeah.
We've evolved. We sleep outside. It's fine. You get used to the cold.
Uh-huh.
And the human-y humans do the testing, and they find there's traces of human remains in the soil.
Oh. They've been killing
and they're
humans.
Like, have you been killing the competition? Uh-oh. Is that what's happening? And they're like, no. When we die, we are buried in the soil.
Uh-huh.
We become the fertilizer for the new generation.
Oh.
We give back to the land. And the human-y humans are like, oh, that's gross, disgusting. They don't understand at all. This whole thing is interrupted by the sound of another of these machines landing.
Uh-oh.
And the trees realize it's landing on a particular field, the field where their saplings are planted.
Oh, no.
Their field of growing children, and
oh,
they
dear.
Run. Everyone runs there. They're too late to save most of the children.
Oh,
they're
dear.
Dead. Many, many injured as well. And there's a scuffle, and they let the humans board their machine and leave.
Mm.
And at that point, we learn how they've evolved.
These tree-like humans.
Yeah, they evolved because these corporations did what they do in nowadays, mm-hmm. which is they create seeds that will grow into a plant, but an infertile plant, a plant that won't produce its own seeds.
Okay.
So therefore, farmers year after year have to buy new seeds from them.
Oh, dear.
So nature found a way to maybe plant a seed inside humankind and then have a symbiotic relationship and evolve.
Wow.
They are the new generation, the super seedlings, if you will.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they've suffered a tragedy here. They've lost some of their precious children.
Yeah.
But something has happened. Their plan has gone into action.
Oh.
A very, very sweet form of revenge, and that's what we're about to find out. Ginkgo was the first to come to their senses and speak. We planted them, right? The trees that had grabbed the suited dolls last replied in unison. We planted them. The trees all sighed with relief, and Ginkgo knelt before the sapling stumps of their violated, stolen children, drew them close and began to cry. We buried the murdered trees and planted new saplings. Some said that because the location of our nursery had been found out, we needed to find a new place to hide and start over. But because there were still saplings that had miraculously survived, we had to stay put for the time being. The surviving saplings were simply too damaged to risk transplanting. We decided to wait as we watched over our children. The large machine and the doll-like people were sure to come back someday. Never knowing when that would be, we moved the forest location and modified its shape so we could protect our children better and escape more quickly should the need arise. We tended to the wounds of our children as best as we could. And so we wait. It's unlikely the same people will return. They probably can't. You see, we planted seeds all over those last three before they made it to their machine. The seeds entered their bodies and probably spread to anyone else inside the machine. When the suited dolls return to where they're from, they will spread our seeds to whoever else they come in contact with. We only need one of those seeds to sprout. Just one. One is enough. Some of us suggest running away, but truth be told, there is nowhere left for us to run. The humans beyond the forest have conquered the world with their rapidly moving intelligent machines. The only things we can lean on are our roots
and 2 feet. When the large machines return, our roots will be pulled from the ground and we will wither away in experimental labs and prisons. But our seeds will survive. Of our countless seeds, surely at least one will survive, and somewhere it will take root, and we will start over again. For the sake of that one, we wait for the day they return over the horizon, not via a large, dirty machine, but in the form of a pollen message. For the day the seeds we spread return, dancing in the wind. If such a day truly comes, that will be the day humanity, the whole world, will be reborn. The earth and oceans will no longer be wounded, and humans and nature will both stretch their arms toward the sun. We are still waiting.
Tigris saying the perfect revenge. I'm laughing out loud. The trees planted the corporations and made them take root so deep they couldn't move again. Or at least that's the plan. Turning everyone into kind of trees?
Yeah, turning everyone into something more natural. Tigris also saying, and even if it's humans, they're still alien to that world. And Peter, I was only following orders isn't an excuse. Individuals have a choice. The choice made was to follow orders. Therefore, the soldier is just as guilty. Thank you, Aaron. That's what I'm talking about.
No.
Yes,
no,
Peter, no. That's entirely what people think.
I don't want to blame all the troops who have got off to these terrible wars around the world. It's not their fault. It's the leaders of the
corporations. We all have a hand in these things, Peter.
Jackie says, worms, insects, moles, and other growing things in
my
earth.
Beard.
In your beard as well.
Sophie's saying, a world with machines, AI controlling the world, generic humans developed in a lab, the capitalism generation where humans are newly developed reminds me of the movie Divergent. Mm. Yeah, it's a common topic in sci-fi, talking about the idea of humans changing themselves, manipulating themselves.
Is this the end of the story then?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay, so they've been tricky planting the seeds in those kind of human-like creatures, and then hoping that just one takes root and they can kind of reset.
Yeah, but so we don't know. But I, Peter, for one, am rooting for them.
Pun not accepted. Oh. Rejected.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it was really hard to pick which of the 8 stories to feature, because they're all brilliant. They're all really sort of gripping, and you want to get to the end of them.
Are they all like this, or they're all very different?
No, they're all sci-fi, but they all have their own particular flavour.
Uh-huh.
And I thought last time we had the very grotesque side of Bora Chung's writing, and I thought today I wanted to show the more social, political side that we get. And I just want to say, I beg, borrow, don't steal, buy this book. The final story in the collection, called To Meet Her, is my absolute favourite. But I'm not going to say anything about it on the show because I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Wow.
I do sometimes cry at books, but it's very, very rare. And this is one of those occasions where I actually cried.
Oh, wow.
The story wrecked me, and for very, very good reason.
It's linked to, like, real events in the
I'm
world.
I'm not saying anything,
well.
Peter. Shush.
I did. I said that. But that's as far as I'll go.
Yeah. So this is science fiction as political protest. In this story, Seed, this is a problem we have right now.
Mm.
Corporations are using their power to destroy and to harness nature so they can profit from it. Mm. You've seen the price of apples these days.
Oh, it's insane, isn't it?
Yeah. I think there's another thing that reminded me, reading this, of this very, very disturbing fact, that we look around ourselves and we see this franchise and that franchise and we think, oh, well, that's one company. And then you look at how they're linked and you find they're all just subsidiaries of one big corporation. And there's just a few big corporations that basically own the lion's share of everything.
Yeah.
So it's a really good reminder that we need, pun intended, grassroots activism, that we need to support independent businesses and we need to protect what we have.
Yeah,
we need to fight for what we have.
Yeah, and I do feel like these big businesses, if you think of them as really scary and wanting to take over the world, you can believe that as well. But I often think like they're just too big. Like no one is in control of them, and they're just like kind of rolling along, and nobody really wants this, but the profit motive just drives it on and on. Someone just needs to, yeah, like you said, maybe have them split up into tiny little companies and they can't do much harm. I think they just get too big for their own boots.
I think the problem is that the purpose of a business should not be profit.
Mm, yeah.
The profit should be a benefit.
Sure.
But the purpose of a business is to serve or to create or to help in some way.
Yeah.
And that's what we've lost in modern capitalism,
yeah,
as we come to perhaps what might be end-stage capitalism before we go into something else.
Yeah, I do really agree with that. But yeah, in this system, it's very hard to ignore. You don't need to ignore profit, but it's hard to even not prioritize it. It has to be number one under these rules, basically, to survive.
But this is the thing. It doesn't have to be number one. Mm. We've been told it has to be. And when we see the wealth gap in countries getting bigger and bigger and bigger, here in Korea, it's a big problem as well,
yeah,
where we have people. I saw the news this morning. 1/5 of adults in the UK are not employed. Because I think, wow, a lot of them have just given up. We've broken the social contract. We were told if we worked hard, yeah, we'd get a pension and get all this, and it's not working. It's broken.
Yeah, it is. Maybe we need to plant some seeds of hope somehow.
I'm planting some seeds of anarchy in this show today.
Yes, you are indeedy. Your one-line review for this.
Fight the power. No, sorry. a splendid collection of science fiction that is a must-read for all fans of the future.
Oh, fantastic. I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting this maybe as an audiobook. I want to.
There is
to
an audiobook narrated by Grace Chung, I think it is.
Oh, nice. I might check that out. Next week.
We got a poetry from Gusang, translated by Anson Jae or Brother Anthony. It's Infant Splendor. It's available online for free. The book is out of print, so Brother Anthony, as he always does, he puts it up on his website so everyone can read it in advance. Do let us know what you think of it. Thanks, as always, to the Literary Translation Institute of Korea for the help with copyright permission, and thanks to Bora Chung for her brilliant tales, and to Anton Her for his excellent translation. I'll be back next week with another book.
One question from Leon before we, yes, let you leave. Are you excited for Anton Her's own novel, Toward Eternity, and what other upcoming translations do you have that you're excited about, if any?
There's lots, but I'm not going to talk about them. But yes, I'm excited for his novel. I don't know whether we'll be able to feature it on the show. We'll have to persuade PD and him.
Well, that's true. It's not strictly going to be Korean translated into English, is it?
But it is a Korean translator who does translate. I don't know. There's lots of good stuff coming out. I'm not going to spoil things for you.
Leon says The Midnight Timetable by Bora Chung, translated by Anton Her, could be coming out.
It is coming out. It's coming out next year, I think.
Oh, have a wonderful week, Paul.
Thank you, bye.
You can listen to Check It Out with Paul Matthews on Arirang Radio's hashtag Daily K every Wednesday from 10 a.m. KST.